Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the 18 that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
Yes, it is John Pollock and Waiting with you on this Monday evening to review the Monday Night Football doubleheader.
Of course. Yes. Yes.
Two football games they had to go against tonight.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of the points scored and the balls thrown and the...
I was more in favor of the former than the latter overall. But
yeah, okay.
Some great pass interference.
Yeah, I concur.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If you're just tuning in, we just went through 40 minutes worth of news and zero football talk, but plenty of boxing discussion with, of course, the big Terrence Crawford win over Canelo Alvarez on Saturday night. The unfortunate passing of Ricky Hatton at the age of 46, and also going through our thoughts on the World's Collide show, Andrade gone from WWE, Collision and AEW wrapping up at the 2300 Arena and how All Out is shaping up just days before their pay-per-view, and what's going on in the world of pro wrestling Kazuyuki Fujita, which is Noah with the N1 victory tournament. He's been getting a lot of victories, but ran into an L on Monday.
Mm. Thank you for continuing to keep us updated.
I think I sold way on following the Fujita train through the finals.
I like experience it through you.
Okay, well, I'm here to bring it to you. And if you do like to experience things in the flesh with the Post Wrestling crew, we're going to be live and in living color this coming Saturday at All Out, happening at Gabby's, 309 King Street West. We are going to be getting together with all of you nuts as we will be counting down to All Out. We're going to be kicking things off at 11:30 a.m. We have moved things up. We are not going head to head with the pay-per-view. We have decided we're going to go a bit earlier to because this is pay-per-view revenue that we could be losing out on. So there's going to be plenty of wrestling tunes to be played, Davey's drink specials. You know what's better than one of Davey's drinks on a Saturday afternoon? One of Davey's drinks before noon, okay? That's how you want to start All Out day, okay? Because you're going to be all out of being sober probably by mid-afternoon. Plus, we will be handing out prizes, all of that good stuff. Braden, fresh off his trip to Japan, he'll probably still be jet lagged, so that's going to be a lot of fun for myself. And, of course, Davey will be basically running things. I will just show up, and we're going to FaceTime Wei as well. We'll bring him in.
Please do. I wish I could make it. I'm on childcare duty, unfortunately. Could not get that changed, so I'm cursing all of this. All of these shenanigans, people changing pay-per-view times. But I'll be there in spirit, and I know that you guys will have a lot of fun. And John Pollock, will you have a drink?
No, I won't be. I won't be. I'll be the guy drinking water in the corner.
Well, that could be fun, too.
Yes. There's only one person to blame for why Wei cannot show up, and it also would summarize what would happen if Wei were to leave his duties on Saturday morning.
It was a divorce.
Exactly. Thank you, Mr. Shapiro. Yeah.
Do you think he had a great weekend? What do you think his eyes did when he saw that $47 million gate?
He had such a great weekend that I'm sure he decided to repurchase some of the outstanding shares for his company. Yeah. $1 billion worth, maybe.
Yeah. So TKO announced a pair of programs to purchase back stock, Class A common stock, and this is worth up to $1 billion. And so their stock soared today. It hit their all-time record. I think the highest it hit was around $212. It did settle off. I think it closed around, wait, might pick it up here, around
104 point, $204 and
yeah, which is still like super high level crazy for the TKO stock. But yeah, you could see how high it was trading earlier in the day based off of this reaction. So it was met very favorably before kind of leveling off, and it was kind of a push for the day. But hey, it's they're doing wonderful in TKO yeah. land.
Hit its all-time high earlier today at $212.49. So
cash kills.
On to Raw. We do have to make mention of the fact that coming up this week. So Wednesday, Wei and I will be up a bit later because we have September to remember, and you need to remember that we will be live at just after 11 Eastern after the 3-hour show ends. We will be doing the show Wednesday night, just an hour later, to recap all of the fun going down in London, Ontario, Canada. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, and the other London. Let's not forget about it.
Remember the other it, London, which is kind of what the sign says when you drive in. It just has in quotations, other. Yep. Thursday, Wei and I are going to Landover, Maryland, or as Vince McMahon calls it, suburban Washington, D.C.
Oh, how kind of him to add the suburban in there. I mean, yeah. If it was a different era, he would have just said,
it's we're not only in a different state, then it's in Landover, and they market this all as like this White House theme to the whole show. It's like, it's just weird. It's just, there is a, I don't know.
Hold on a second though. I just did a quick Google Maps. Landover, Maryland to Washington, D.C. is a 21-minute drive on a freeway.
It is. But again, there is like a distinction between the two. So
suburban Maryland is, or sorry, suburban DC isn't the most egregious.
If you were called like suburban Toronto is where you grew up, Wei, would you not have a bit of a chip on your shoulder after
not
time?
Not really. No, because it's true.
Okay.
That's what Scarborough is.
Okay. What if, see, I see this as a difference between like Ottawa and Montreal, where they're relatively close.
That's
to
not
one
20
another.
Minutes away.
It's more than an hour away. But yeah. What would be the equivalent? Like, this is like, there's a border between them, okay?
Yes, I understand what you're saying. Okay. But the Washington, D.C. just doesn't, it's its own state.
Well, it's a district, but yeah. It's...
you know what I mean.
What's wrong with Landover? That's the question I have. What's so wrong with Landover?
Then you can't, like, what imagery would you use for a Landover, Maryland show?
Okay. Probably Vince McMahon puking when he heard the name. That's what I'm thinking. This show has something for everyone.
We were many years away from actually booking a TKO event in Washington, D.C. at the White House.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. There were no site fees paid by the Landover municipalities for this event in 1995. But what they got was Diesel and Bret Hart, the truck stops here, as Bret Hart proclaimed.
This is one of my all-time favorite matches, okay? And I don't remember exactly why, but I remember really thinking this was one of my all-time favorite matches, being a Bret Hart fan at the time, watching the Survivor Series, and thinking he was so far away from this world championship, ever becoming champion again, ending the reign, a big daddy cool Diesel.
That's a 30-year spoiler, Wei, that you've just ruined for people. Yes, we have this match in the main event. We have the wild card match. The Dark Side against the Royals, and the only WWF pay-per-view to feature Aja Kong.
This sounds awesome, and of course I have not started yet. But this,
if you just look on paper, this is one of the more interesting WWF cards of its era because of the, like, just look at the talent in the opener, and it's just like random workers that they threw into this 4-on-4 elimination match. Then you follow it with like all these women from like All Japan women with Alundra Blaze, And then we get into like this like mishmash of different talent, which was an interesting concept. Brett in the main event and all under the banner of suburban Washington, D.C., presented by Karate Fighters.
I'm looking forward to it.
1995. What a time to be alive. As it was on Monday in Springfield, Massachusetts, suburban Boston, at the Mass Mutual Center in front of 7,285, according to WrestleTix. This arena, I instantly loved because this looked like an old arena. Like it had like the yellow staircases, and I figured this arena has to be close to double my age, and I wasn't too far off. This thing opened in 1972.
Interesting.
And this arena has gotten like nothing of significance from WWE outside of like house shows. It got an In Your House pay-per-view in 1997 and a Saturday night's main event a decade before that. So they are not used to television cameras at this venue.
What was the number again?
7285.
72.
And that's with 85. The no stage. Like they didn't do any stage, so they were trying to maximize what they could fit in.
Does it surprise you that this was one of the stops for, you know, Cena's seven final shows?
It does. And anyone thinking they would just book this for a sentimental value that he played football near here, I do not think they were booking this with that in mind. So, yeah, I was somewhat surprised that Springfield got a date here.
Interesting.
I'm sure they paid an arm and a leg to be in this camera shot in the background, but nonetheless, Springfield, you got your episode of Raw. Our announcers are Joe Tessitore and Corey Graves. And now, did you notice tonight that watching Raw, not only was there no timer during the commercial breaks, mine, like you couldn't even skip the commercial breaks. Like it didn't do the automatic skip. So
I did notice that.
Yeah, so that was kind of interesting.
Which was not the case for the European shows.
No,
to my recollection,
no, I've never had this the double where you couldn't like it didn't automatically fast forward through the commercial breaks and
you could manually.
If you were watching live, it had the timer and they didn't have the timer on either. So I think naturally you probably watched a lot more Raw content than you do most Mondays just as a result of this.
You think that's strategy?
Yes.
Interesting.
I thought so.
I guess why else
when you've been doing it the other way for 9 months?
Well, I just wonder if this week was special because of the early start time, you know, or if this is something that they'll maintain for.
I don't know how that would change. Like people are still tuning in late and it's not like it's you're just tuning in an hour earlier or. Like, so, I wasn't watching it live.
So all of this is from the Canadian perspective. And I do hear from American viewers who say, like, you know, in America, that you can't, you get ads. And we don't get ads, of course. And for these international shows, they're unable to skip them.
LA Knight comes up to confront Jey Uso during the arrivals. And they have to get separated. And they get sent to the principal's office by Adam Pearce and are threatened with a fine. We go to the arena, and they had announced earlier in the day Cena would kick off the show, so the whole place is chanting for Cena, and they blow the roof off of this 63-year-old venue as he comes out, and the place goes wild. And Joe Tessitore mentions WrestlePalooza on the enhanced ESPN app, which was the language they were using to promote Saturday's show. More on this later. Alicia Taylor gets to do the Mark Nash introduction. And Cena explains that he used to play football at Springfield College as an offensive lineman. And playing offensive lineman for that Springfield College prepared him for life in WWE. I've got friends and family here. It's my niece's birthday. She's not here tonight. And then praises Alicia for that intro because he decided to keep it because it allows the fans to show their energy and to share a moment. So he's gotten over that bad day he was having.
It continues to evolve. Whatever this heel run was, you know, in hindsight, it was a bad day. It was what else?
Why didn't they do just the Bobby Ewing shower scene and we just forgot those 6 months completely? None of that stuff happened. during those 6 months.
Maybe Cody just hit him so hard in the match that it just like it distorted his view of what the past 6 months was.
You joke. So. That's literally a better explanation than what we've gotten for this just 180 that he has done.
Yeah.
Again, no one's complaining because this is such a better.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's night and day. It's so different that no one's going to be quibbling why they got here. But and if you think we're going to look back and this is going to be one of the years for WWE to say how we deserve an Emmy, I'm sorry. This has been a pretty brutal story if we're actually breaking it down throughout the year.
Well, Untold will be very interesting to see if they talk about any of this, if they are self-critical enough that they can admit that the audience didn't want it, right? They might not blame it on themselves. They'll blame it on maybe, we were trying to fight against the tide. The audience was just, they loved John too much. We'll see how they handle it. But
I think you just came up with a better title, though, for the show of what to expect. Unreal as opposed to Untold, because okay, I think this could remain Untold.
Unreal, Untold, same thing.
He states, I've got a tall hill to climb this Saturday, and Lesnar wants to end me, and says that no doubt he is controversial. No doubt. No doubt he's controversial. Yeah. This prompts a fuck you Lesnar chant.
Mm-hmm.
And Cena says, Netflix, they're saying talk to Lesnar, and we're going to talk to him. So then the crowd chants, whoop his ass. Cena says, I could have turned down this match. It would have been smart. It would have been safe and easy. But the fans who are chanting, they're the reason that I've accepted this. And I will fight because I'm the last real champion. And the last real champion isn't about being the champion. No, of course not. Or the face of the company. It's about always showing up and an oldie but a goodie, never taking your ball and going home. He will not back down from Brock. He will take the fight to him. We are two generational talents. I founded Suplex City, taking your best shot, and I'm still standing. And he points to a fan sign that reads, Cena's jorts are greater than Lesnar's jeans, which is a fairly clever sign.
Mm-hmm.
A really good promo from John Cena, who was much more effective just doing a soliloquy than Brock was doing improv comedy on Friday. And I did find that the reaction kind of interesting because this did not just feel like, I don't know. Did you read more into it with the reaction to Brock that it seemed like a more negative response, or did you just feel it was standard heel response?
Standard heel response is what I would have said. Yeah. I mean, if I saw no indication that this was an audience thinking so much about, you know, like his scandal, or at least his involvement in the Janelle Grant lawsuit. I just thought, I mean, this is an audience that hates Brock Lesnar, maybe for various reasons, but primarily because he's a heel opposing John
Cena. Maybe that's
Cena.
Why they didn't want to do a face-to-face with these two. Maybe Cena would like just delve into that on the fly.
This Cena has been known to, I guess, dive into, you know, some taboo topics, right?
He's controversial, that Brock. He's controversial. Yeah.
I thought Cena delivered a great promo. First of all, we should touch on, like, he did throw a line in there about how he defines what being a last real champion is, okay? And that is somebody who doesn't take his ball and go home. So, again, it's a very different definition of what the last real champion was, you know, just a few months ago. But I'm happy with this right now. It's just funny to see how he's like, you know, we're really retconning what the last few months were. But what a promo here. You know, I think he's been so consistent ever since turning back into a babyface with these sort of, like, I'm in your hometown for one last time, so I'm going to give you the best rally cry type of babyface promo you've ever heard. He's been so consistent with it that it reminds you that he really probably would have had this ability within him at any point. I mean, you know, I think much of his babyface run was criticized for, like, being overly corny, maybe overly PG, if you want to call it that. You don't really get any of those hints in this version of babyface John Cena. In fact, I found a lot of the material very, not necessarily like adult in sort of like a risque sense, but like I don't feel insulted when I'm listening to him speak. I feel like he's talking to me as if I'm an adult. They're very spirited. I would say like they're witty in parts, perfect in length as well. They rile up the crowd. He gets in and he gets out, and everybody leaves satisfied.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the carousel of co-hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Way answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Adam Pearce meets with Jey Uso and LA Knight, and Jey called it a receipt last week when he hit him with the spear. And Pearce says we need to keep the peace because it's one of our biggest shows of the calendar this Saturday. Knight wants to face Breaker and Bronson Reed. And then he says, well, you can have the match, but you need a partner. So he picks Jimmy, and Jey does not like this idea that he's going to try and team with Jimmy. So he's got to go pitch Jimmy on this. This main event, and he better do it quick because Adam Pearce needs a main event for this show. Coming down with Nick Aldis syndrome,
as GMs tend to do. Yeah,
it does happen. Lyra Valkyria against Roxanne Perez, a very good match here. Lyra was selling her lower back, and that's what Roxanne would work on. Raquel tripped Lyra and gets ejected, and then Perez yanks her off of the top turnbuckle, just pulls the leg out, and down comes Lyra crashing. Lyra would take a quebrada onto the lower back. This was during the commercial, but a Roxy chant started from the crowd. So Lyra just lighting up the audience in this babyface position. There's a fisherman suplex. Lyra's back goes out. Then she comes back with a gut wrench powerbomb, a Rana off the buckle, and then it's a cartwheel into the double knees onto the back by Perez, who then applies a crossface, kicks off the rope, but in kicking off and turning, Lyra escapes the crossface to move to the Nightwing, and Lyra pulls off the win in 9 minutes and 5 seconds. I thought these two had a very good match and telling the story with the back, and this was going to be a big night for Lyra. She was going to be in multiple segments.
Yes, she was. Yeah. Very good TV match that I was actually hoping to see more of. I felt like they were at least out of the commercials, you know, barely getting started before the end.
Maybe that's why Netflix changed things tonight. They wanted people to see this whole match.
Yeah. Yeah. I should really be tuning in live. But I mean, I also realized that's not the intent of the segment because we had something bigger. I will say though, I mean, Roxanne lost on the World's Collide show. She lost tonight as well. And I guess like she's young enough that like she can take these losses and I'm sure she'll bounce back fine. But maybe to me, it says something that like they see her as, you know, somebody who's been being able to take pins, but I don't know if they feel that. I see that same sort of mentality for Raquel, who I think they're a little bit more protective now. So to me, it almost is a sign of how well Raquel is doing that she feels a bit more protected than Roxanne Perez right now within the Judgment Day.
Raquel comes back after the match and attacks Lyra on her way to the back and gets laid out in the ring. Perez hits the Pop Rocks, and then Bailey runs down attacking Raquel and Roxanne, and she gets a huge reaction here in Springfield. I mean, it was a very hot crowd throughout most of the night. Bailey hits a Stun Dog Millionaire onto Raquel, and then she does her big like hugger pose and hits the Bailey to belly and just goes and starts hugging everybody at ringside, including Tessitore and Graves, Alicia Taylor, and then a bunch of fans as she turns back the clock.
Yeah, yeah, this was her coming out purely, I would say, as a babyface hugger gimmick Bailey, although with a hint of voices in her head midway through. So just the first part of the evening. I mean, I think conveying this gimmick in edited video is one thing, but it'll certainly require very strong performances and clever booking to make a schizophrenic gimmick not feel too corny in 2025. But the crowd already likes her, so let's see where it goes.
Pierce meets with Stephanie Vaquer and Io Sky. They respect each other, and each declares they're going to win. So the Kabuki Warriors enter, and Asuka proclaims that no one is ready for Io. And then it's made that Stephanie Vaquer will face Kairi Sane tonight, and Adam Pearce, worried about this tag match maybe falling through in the main event, also needs another match in the final hour. So this match also gets made, and Sane just shadow boxes as the scene ends and Asuka yells to her to come. LA Knight meets with Jimmy Uso, pitches him on the tag match, and Jimmy says, "You're putting me in a tough spot." He turns him down, and Adam Pearce is going to have an aneurysm after this. So he won't, you have to find somebody else. Saturday, we are going to get the countdown to WrestlePalooza at 5 p.m. Eastern time on the ESPN app and WWE social channels. And then the show happens, and then they will do the post show after on all the same outlets. Kofi Kingston against Penta. So they come out, and before they came back from commercial, they did a promo in the ring where Woods, just like at Worlds Collide, mentions having open head surgery last Thursday, blaming it on the Mexican destroyer. Now, did you see the image of what they extracted from this man's head?
No.
Oh my God. I don't know if you want to see it. So he had some kind of a mass or something in the back of his head that they had to remove. And he showed a photo of this. And I'm not exaggerating. It looked like they took a full-size chicken wing out of the back of his head. And that's what was there. It was insane that this thing was removed from his head.
I'm not seeing any sort of he actually showed what was in there.
It was on he posted it somewhere. I can't remember where.
Okay. Oh my God. So what is this?
It was just
lymphoma.
That's what he had said. I mean, he didn't give any kind of serious breakdown of what exactly it was they found in here. But yeah, wow. It sounds like it was
crazy.
He had this on Thursday, and then it was enough that they sidelined him from and took him out of the World's Collide match, and they put Grayson Waller in.
That sounds scary. Yeah.
Kingston notes he is from Massachusetts, but the part he came from has a lot more money than this pisshole city, like Landover. Mm-hmm. And he shouldn't have to wrestle after this grueling tag title match with Pagano and Psycho Clown. So the match begins. Penta hits a Tope Kanhiro right away. And then it's Kingston with a splash onto Penta's back and takes over the match. We come back. Kingston eats these big chops and then turns Penta's mask. They get into this striking battle. And then he calls for the Mexican destroyer. Woods gets onto the apron, and Penta manages to super kick Waller, who runs in. And after the distraction by Woods, Penta springboards off the second rope into a Mexican destroyer, beating Kofi Kingston in 7 minutes and 31 seconds. If there is anyone who should be doing a broken neck gimmick, it should be Kofi Kingston after taking this. This looked spectacular at the end and should amplify the need to ban the Mexican destroyer.
Yeah, he, I'm trying to think, like, what the comparison would be. Like, I guess he sold it like he was paralyzed or actually dead. One of the two, with his eyes wide open. And I guess on the one hand, it could be seen as kind of, tasteless. But, I mean, on the other hand, it's so ridiculous that it almost feels like very, Mortal Kombat-y. So, I mean, this has to end with Big E getting involved somehow, doesn't it? You know, now you got the other two New Day members, both with broken necks. Has to end with Big E being involved, doesn't it? I'm not saying wrestling. I'm saying at least, you know,
No? Yeah, now that you bring it up, I mean, that could be where they go. They both now have neck injuries as a result. I guess you could do a segment based off of that.
No, okay.
Yes. Jey Uso is on the phone, and he asks whoever's on the phone to call him back, and then when Jimmy asks, he does not reveal who he was on the phone with. So, secrets between brothers, and Jimmy mentions how LA Knight wants to team with him, and Jay immediately cuts him off and says, "You have to say no." And Jimmy takes issue with being told what to do, informs Jay, "I had already turned him down, but I'm not taking orders from you. You don't have any ULA fall around your neck." And he walks away, and he's going to team with LA Knight and informs him. And Adam Pearce gets his main event.
Yeah. So who do you think Jay was on the phone with? What's the secret?
I mean, you would think it was Roman, but they didn't make it clear. I mean, the time change would be a little difficult. Maybe not. If he's in Australia,
what would the controversy be if he was on the phone with Roman?
Yeah, it's not so much a controversy, so maybe he's wrong.
It's got to be his dad.
Their dad? Rikishi?
Yeah. He's got to be talking to, hey, any updates on this Roger Jackson incident? You know, are you guys, like, the world is waiting. Are there any arrests or what? What's going on?
I think that's a worthy call to be making at this point, asking about the update. Like, this has been several weeks now. There's been no headway on this at all. Yeah.
How's Circle Stew?
Yeah.
It must have been what he was asking.
Maybe.
Check out the GoFundMe.
Maybe they were on the phone with Kick. So Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch come out. Giant CM Punk chants. And Rollins will not say the name of their city. All right? Suburban blank. And he gives a big introduction for Becky. So now the crowd shifts to AJ Lee. And Becky says, "I've got a lot to say about her, but I'm going to say it to her face." So AJ Lee and Punk come out to AJ's music. And AJ skips to the ring. I think if Punk really wanted to be on board, it's one thing to come out to her music. He should have done the skip. No?
He did do it. He did do it on the online exclusive after her debut.
Oh, did he? Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Punk introduces himself as AJ's husband, and that gets a chant going. I mean, these were the easiest crowd to get any kind of chant going. Like, they would just chant anything that they were instructed to.
They really wanted to chant.
Yeah. They chanted AJ's husband. They chanted goofs when that's how they referred to Becky and Seth. Later, they chant constipated at Becky. Punk calls both of their music, their themes, crappy. Take that. And I was willing to put Cult of Personality on the shelf to just let them light it up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, his point was that he was willing to not have both of their themes played because he is willing to give the spotlight to his wife when the other two cannot agree on who should take the spotlight.
He asks if Seth and Becky can manage to share the spotlight, or will you let your egos get in the way on Saturday? Which is kind of the overall theme of this head-to-head contest on Saturday between WWE and AEW. Becky screams at the crowd who are getting on Seth and calls them, quote, human incarnation of herpes. It's not nice. Rollins says that, AJ, you are the best decision Punk ever made in his personal life. But in business, inserting you is a mistake that he will regret for the rest of his days. Says AJ wouldn't be here if, AJ explains, I wouldn't even be here if you hadn't used Becky as a human shield. And Becky takes over, calls Punk irresponsible, and asks how AJ is feeling physically and how does your neck feel, because she read AJ's book. And she says that your neck, this is a blood feud, and how are you going to feel when I'm pummeling your face in, and tells Punk that AJ is not an asset, she's a liability. AJ responds, she did not read Becky's book, and she doesn't know how her neck's going to hold up. The crowd is going nuts. They're singing for her, but I won two titles with this damaged neck, and refers to Becky's constipated face. So this leads to the constipation chant. I've been known to be irrational, and I'm a Puerto Rican from New Jersey. She could shank a chick, which is the stipulation that they could have introduced here if you're going into a head-to-head battle.
If it was AEW, I think it would actually be a possibility. Yeah.
Very possible. Rollins calls AJ a little girl and says that Punk also has a habit of leaving things when they let him down, and says that after we rip you to shreds, you better hope that Punk doesn't leave you too. And AJ slaps Seth, and Seth says, I'm not going to put my hands on a lady, but I have someone who will, and looks at Becky. Becky wants no part of this and starts arguing with Seth. And then she leaves the ring And Rollins goes, pie faces Punk, who chases after Rollins, leaving AJ in the ring susceptible for a manhandle slam when Becky returns. And then Becky slaps the hell out of CM Punk some more, and they laugh and leave to conclude our four faces facing off.
Mm-hmm. Continues to be the hottest program in the entire company. Just in terms of, I think, online buzz, in terms of, I would say, consistency, because, you know, Cena and Brock, for as much as they're promoting it, a lot of that is just really based on the fumes of what's existed beforehand, and also the fact that it's, you know, Cena having one of his last matches. This actually feels like a feud, and you're getting weekly interactions and verbal exchanges between the two, and good verbal exchanges at that. I think the focus continues to be just elevating AJ Lee, or reintroducing her to a certain audience, and just showing what her personality is and her connections to this established feud between Punk and Rollins. And really, the women continue to just take center stage here, and are really like the focal points of all of this. Becky, I think, has been so good. And AJ has sounded like she fits right in. And honestly, it's all working really, really well. I really like Rollins' line about AJ leaving Punk to prompt the slap from AJ. I thought it was, you know, just personal enough that I thought it reached the justification that you'd want for a babyface to do that. And I also loved Rollins doing Punk's line of saying, what is it? I never put my hands on a lady. So thankfully, I have someone who will. Only for Becky to not respond the same way as AJ and instead cower from the situation. I thought that was very clever and well done.
I thought everyone was really great in this segment. And of all of them, like, Punk was like the most kind of just background player here. I mean, he really let AJ just take center stage. Rollins and Becky have been outstanding in this whole role. And I think AJ's really acclimated herself well coming back and being on live television. I don't think anyone could have imagined this comeback would have this level of kind of momentum behind it. And I think the obvious outcome to this is absolutely not beating AJ and setting up the title match coming out of this. Like, that would be the finish I do in this match, is AJ coming out of this, getting the win, and it's her and Becky at whenever your next show, whether it's the Australia one. If you hold this off to like Survivor Series, I mean, that's going pretty far, but I think that's the match you want to get to here. And obviously probably another Rollins Punk match at some point.
Yeah, I would definitely do AJ getting the win. Absolutely. Just to continue to establish her. Yes, to promote the match. But both of them are going to get their championship matches, I'm sure, sooner than later.
Great segment that the four had.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Recap of Worlds Collide, and then Saxton interviews Dominic and is asked about his relationship with El Grande Americano, and he tells Saxton, don't worry about it, sweetheart. And because he's the mega champion, he's also now the mega intercontinental champion, and we hear this commotion off screen with the New Day beating down Penta, and he's just left laying, and then after all the damage has been done, in run his brothers, Ivar and Eric. What happened? Like, what else did you guys have on the agenda tonight? What did you guys have that was so pressing that you couldn't have my back? And maybe this will send Penta to fly to Phoenix to look for some real help.
Why would you need that when you have the Viking Raiders here?
Well, these guys were kind of useless here, weren't they?
Right. But the fact that they showed up.
He had to overcome Woods and Waller getting involved in his match, no help. This, they're way too late. I mean, these guys, this happened last week when he got attacked backstage. Like, these War Raiders have been awful in terms of, like, bodyguards.
Yeah. When did the War Raiders first team with Penta? I'm just trying to think, like, if there was ever a thought of, like, the Phoenix and Andrade connection with Penta, or if that was just, I don't know, never a thing, right? It just feels Yeah. I mean, I hope they pair him with Phoenix.
El Grande Americano took on Dragon Lee. And so this match, Dragon Lee got to shine quite a bit in this match. And Ludwig Kaiser got 10 minutes here. There's a flying Rana over the top by Dragon Lee. And then Grande lands on the desk. So Lee follows with this crazy somersault missile through the ropes. And they go to the break. Grande takes over. I think it's now mandatory that if you are a masked babyface, they have to tie your mask to the rope at some point during the match. Like, that is just standard now.
If you have a mask with, like, the, I guess with like long string attached to it.
Yes, then you have to tie it. There's a flying knee Liger Bomb combo by Dragon Lee for a two count. Hits the double stomp and tries to unmask El Grande Americano when a second one pops up with a kick from the apron. Grande hits a blockbuster for a near fall, and then Uncle Allen runs down and he's looking, and the announcers are pointing under the ring. So AJ, oh hail, he's got to get down on all fours, climb all under the ring to go after the second Americano, gets his hands on him and tosses him over the barricade. And then AJ's just standing by when a third one pops up from the timekeeper's area and takes out Allen with a tornado DDT. The second one returns, knocking Lee off the apron, and it's El Grande Americano numero uno with La Cabanera with the submission. A camel clutch in 10 minutes, 12 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Or like sort of like a backbending camel clutch. It's like knees into the opponent. What does La Cabanaria mean? Do you know?
It's not a direct translation of camel clutch, but I don't know what the exact translation of it is.
Okay.
But it's kind of like an accolade is what he did.
With his knees into the opponent.
Are we just going to just coast on this until Survivor Series and we will get all four Grande Americanos?
When is Gable supposed to come back?
I don't know. I don't know what the timetable is. They're very quiet on timetables when we have injuries.
Yeah. I don't know. At this point, I wonder if I don't necessarily see Gable teaming with these guys. In fact, I see Gable opposing these guys, you know, like these three just kind of feel like they're off doing their own thing. And I would suggest that Kaiser at this point has kind of eclipsed Gable in terms of just how well he's been doing with the gimmick. The fact that he speaks Spanish, he's able to take this thing to a whole nother level. So we're just kind of like reintroducing everybody to the fact that there are now three Grande Americanos who are probably Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate. I thought the match itself was great. You know, just Dragon Lee, I think, finally getting a chance to really showcase himself. It always delivers, whether it be in AAA or on Raw. So what are we thinking? LWO, El Grande Americano? Sorry. Yeah, El Grande Americanos. LWO versus them. Or is it Judgment Day? This is probably, like, is this more build for Raw, or is it more build for the next AAA thing?
That's probably both. I think you're going to have this involvement. Like, they're obviously going somewhere with Dominic with all of this, with the Judgment Day. So I can certainly see this could end up being like a stable that Dominic ends up running at the end of all of this.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I like it all.
Lyra is outside of Bailey's room and eavesdrops on Bailey arguing with herself between her two personalities. And she walks in and Bailey's just sitting down. And Lyra asks, "Who are you talking to?" It's like Lyra could not be booked to be more foolish. But she walks in. She thanks Bailey for helping her earlier. And then Bailey snaps, screaming at Lyra for barging in. "Stay out of my locker room, idiot." And Joe Tessitore asks, "Was that the same Bailey who was hugging all of us? It's like she's got a split personality."
Yeah.
I'll say this. I think that this is probably not going to be a great storyline, but I do think Bailey is doing her damnedest to try and make this into something of interest. And you certainly feel like she is, she's definitely trying here. And, Lyra, I don't have much to add here. I feel Lyra just feels like, I don't know. These are this is not her forte in these skits that are, you know, not the easiest to be the fool in the middle of.
Put yourself in her shoes, John, okay? In this world, all right? You hear this person that you've been, like, having these endless matches with talk to themselves behind the door, having, okay, like, a fight, shouting match.
Here's where this falls apart, though, okay? Because we've watched all these vignettes, and not only have the announcers responded to these vignettes that we can hear this, but Lyra went to Adam Pearce concerned from seeing these vignettes to go talk to her. So sure. Lyra in some way knows what's going on here, and she just walks in like, "Oh, who are you talking to?"
She clearly has a suspicion. That's why she went to the door in the first place. Well, and also to, I guess, thank Bailey. But
like, she's observing exactly what you, the viewer, are viewing.
But your first words would still be in that situation, "Who are you talking to?" Just to at least clarify, or at least just as a first response, right?
She heard her. It was her voice.
She heard through the door. She didn't see direct evidence of this. John.
She walked in and there was no one there, Way.
Okay, so then maybe she has an even greater suspicion now. But if her first words were...
What is the suspicion? That she has this magic friend that just poof, disappears into thin air?
If you're going to ask that much, why don't you just ask, hey, like, why didn't she watch the show? Or, like, you know, why didn't... I mean, this is not that crazy to me, okay? If this was some version of, like, a real-life event.
Okay, well, I look forward to this weekly.
If you
drama.
Heard me, okay, after weeks of vignettes of me talking to myself, all right, if behind a closed door with no window in it, you heard me talking to myself, yelling to somebody who sounded just like me, and loudly banging to the door, you open the door, what would your first words be?
Wait, were you talking to yourself?
There's no... That to me is not that much different from what Lyra said here.
Okay. Anyway, I think less of this this angle by the week, but we'll see where it goes.
Oh my God. It's like, listen, this is something out of like WCW, you know, 2000s, and it could end up being that much of a failure. But I think audiences are a lot more, I would say, forgiving these days
will win an award from some people.
When it's done with a character that they already like, and Bailey is somebody that they already love. And if they could see the effort, they will get behind it. And I also don't think it'll be written as poorly or produced as poorly. It has already eclipsed, you know, much of like stuff from that era. So I think it'll be treated better. I mean, I think it's risky, again, trying to do a schizophrenic gimmick in 2025. For many reasons, but I think people will appreciate the performance ultimately from Bailey here.
Could this one get the Emmy?
Oh, everything. No, it's Penta and the New Day and the paralysis. Yeah, that's going to get it.
Rhea Ripley, who is there any character that just has so little going on more than Rhea Ripley at the moment? Like, she is in the ultimate holding pattern, where her role tonight was to walk up to Stephanie Vaquer, wish her luck at WrestlePalooza, and she is coming for the winner.
Her role now is just to make entrances into receive a reaction. Like, she does it in NXT. She's been doing it week after week on Raw. She just shows up backstage. Oh, and and then she just goes away. Without any real program. I mean, she's going to, like, they're going to do a tag team with Io, you would think, against the Kabuki Warriors, but that's...
Well, after WrestlePalooza, the next show is in Australia. You would think you put Ripley into something significant on that show.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is kind of just what happens is that, you know, there are going to be times when you're sort of out of the... focus, and this women's division has kind of been throwing a curveball with the loss of Naomi and, you know, having to hold on to this title match for as long as they have. So Ripley's kind of just odd woman out for the time being. Stephanie Vaquer against Kairi Sane. Asuka's screaming orders from the floor, and Sane applies the tarantula during the break, and then it's Vaquer with the running double knees, tries for the SVB, but it is stopped. And then Sane hits a running blockbuster. Vaquer comes back, tries for the devil's kiss. The audience is excited, but it gets stopped, and they're very sad. Sane climbs to the top, but Vaquer joins her, is knocked into the tree of woe, and Sane hits the double stomp, hits the cutlass twice, and then after Vaquer ducks a third one, hits a dragon screw out of the corner, high cross to both Kabuki warriors on the floor, and then hits the devil's kiss, which at this point may as well just be her finisher, because it's like a come down when she goes to the SVB after it and wins in 11 minutes and 57 seconds.
They did that for that battle royal, didn't they?
That's right, yes. How it could just many, be a submission.
How many devil's kisses would it require to actually like justify like a knockout?
I mean, if you could get the height, like, isn't it basically it's like a less distance for a blunt force trauma? It's like, it's kind
of, should incorporate
thing.
Like a steel chair into it.
Like, or just spike the head. You could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, someday they might get there. I thought it was a really, really fun match. You know, this a match like this really shows you how big of a gulf there is between the Raw women's division and the SmackDown women's division. Like, you have some glowing spots, certainly in the SmackDown women's division, but like the mid card is so rough right now on SmackDown, but on Raw, it just feels like you have just an overabundance of incredible talent, and so much of them, you know, being concentrated in this particular program. But like, man, you got Vaquer, you got Rhea, you've got Becky, you've got now AJ Lee, Io, Kairi, Asuka, you know, it's just so stacked for the women on Raw right now that I really do think they probably could reshuffle some of those names for SmackDown.
Asuka goes into the ring when Io runs down telling Asuka that, she gets in between them and Sky has to calm down Asuka, and then she has her face off and shakes hands with Stephanie Vaquer going into Saturday. Braun Breaker and Bronson Reed, an hour ago, they found out their opponents for tonight, so they put together a very nice video package for this match and call the Usos the greatest team until now. And you're going to get a taste of it tonight, and you're going to find out what happens when the dog is off the leash and the Usos are coming to an end this weekend. So this could be it, the end of the Usos. Kabuki Warriors are backstage, and Io insists that she do this by herself at WrestlePalooza, just like Asuka did. And Asuka reluctantly agrees and then storms off, and Kairi is in tears over this.
Yeah, I thought Io did really well here. You know, this was probably one of the segments where she's had to emote the most, as at least in, you know, in a predominantly English-speaking role. And I thought she did really well. You know, I would say, again, it's a pretty low bar, but I do think like this particular program right now with these three, they are breaking some new ground for the range of acting that I think like a Japanese performer has traditionally done in the WWE.
Then Joe Tessitore promoted that WrestlePalooza, how you can watch it. He says, if you have ESPN, you already get it. You just have to update the app. This is not the case where if you have certain carriers, you will not just have to update the app and you automatically get it. As their own interface states, this works for DirecTV streaming, Fubo TV, Hulu Plus Live TV, Spectrum TV, and Verizon Fios. To my understanding, Comcast and YouTube TV subscribers, which is like over 20 million subscribers, they do not get this just by having the just by subscribing to ESPN. So I don't know. I feel there's going to be some confused and angry people come Saturday if they think it is just as simple. Like tonight sounded like tonight was the first time I ever heard them say, like, differentiate ESPN from the enhanced ESPN app. Like, I do wonder how many people just think this is on regular ESPN on Saturday.
Maybe a lot. Yeah. We'll find out.
We will find out. I mean, it's...
And I guess if you find out and you're disappointed, well, that might prompt you to figure out what the reality is. And if you're already settled down, maybe that's that they're ultimately fine with, you know, you having a bit of frustration if you end up signing up for it anyway.
Yeah, we will see how smooth this goes on the weekend.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the carousel of co-hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Wei answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com.
SmackDown, all they promoted, Cody Rhodes will be on the show, and the Judgment Day are celebrating with champagne for Dominic's title win. Balor thinks that they should pump the brakes because Roxanne and Raquel had a tough night, but the women insist they're going to take care of things with Lyra. And they bring up El Grande Americano. They want to know what is the deal with him and Dominic, and JD asks, he's been doing all these favors, what does he want in return? And Dominic just downplays it, and Balor warns that next time, don't come looking for us for help. And he storms off with JD, the women remain, and then into the room walks Rusev, who introduces himself to Dominic and says he is the next Intercontinental Champion.
Mm. I think it's an interesting next feud for the both of them. You know, mostly Rusev, who I think certainly, I mean, Dom is one of the hottest characters in the entire company right now. So I think being opposed to him will be a huge boost for Rusev. It's an interesting one because who's the babyface and who's the heel here? You know, like Dominic on Raw in most audience circles is the heel, but in AAA he's a big babyface, and depending on who he's paired against, like, he might be cheered like a babyface. And Rusev was last the heel against Sheamus. But I can also see him just transitioning back into a babyface role, like, with this feud, if you just maybe introduce the Rusev Day stuff again, which at this point I could see them doing. So I'm curious to see who gets cheered and who gets promoted as the heel or babyface.
Is there not a tangled background between these two characters in reference to we have Dominic's girlfriend Liv Morgan, who interrupted the wedding of Bobby Lashley and Lana to break that one up. So is there not some history between Lana and Liv Morgan throughout all of this in WWE lore?
You know, I don't know if they're going to break into that one. That a lot's happened since.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if they'll really get into any of the history between these two. Do they have history, like, just even themselves? When Dominic
the two
was...
of them, not as much, no. Assume this is a pretty fresh match.
Okay.
And then our main event was LA Knight and Jimmy Uso against Bron Bron. And they explained in these words that LA Knight is trying to, quote, get his lick back.
Oh, God. Are we just like, I know that was probably a saying before that, but it just, because of the whole Roger Jackson thing, I'm hearing it a lot more.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Knight and Jimmy clear the ring. They had the heat on Jimmy until he hit a whisper in the wind, and the crowd got behind him as he tagged Knight. Knight hits his megastar elbow, followed by an Uso splash. Breaker is in to save Reed. Knight comes off the steps, taking out Reed, and then rolls into the ring as Jimmy spears him. And then, in the coolest move of the show, LA Knight is on the floor, and Braun just flies off camera into the shot with this running shoulder tackle and just looked like he had been sent out of a cannon to hit this on the floor. And then Reed hits the jagged edge to pin Jimmy Uso in 12 minutes.
Sorry, I just clicked on that Xavier Woods link that you sent me. That's disgusting. Oh my God. I hope he's okay. He shouldn't even be standing up right now, much less flying to these shows.
His original tweet.
It's so bad. I'm certainly not going to show it here on YouTube.
Okay, yeah, don't. We might get flagged. He had originally written lymphoma, and he did correct it. It's lipoma that he had, which is kind of like this. You can look it up. It sounds
how
like
do
it's,
you make a mistake like that? I mean, I'm hoping it's just an autocorrect mistake, but
I don't know, yeah. But I mean, lymphoma is definitely a lot scarier than lipoma sounds. So, I mean, it's still like, this is still like, you had to get this extracted. Like, this sounds like it was just like this mass that had like built up in the back of his head, which is.
Yeah, I hope he's okay.
Yeah, I mean,
that coming out of your head does not look like a fun time. Jeez.
On that note, we get back to Raw.
Thank you, John, for.
I just want you to be up to date.
Put that in my head.
Well, put that out of your head. There was a Spirit of Jimmy in the ring. When Jay arrives, he's got the chair. He takes out Braun on the floor. Then Reed swats the chair down, but Jay regains control, takes out both with chair shots. Knight returns with the chair. Jay turns around to catch him, and the two just stare at one another. And then Jay puts his hand out. LA Knight reluctantly agrees, and then he turns around and LA Knight nails him with the BFT. I like this at the end. I mean, LA Knight would have looked like such a putz if he had just accepted this guy's handshake. I like the way they did this. I thought it was good. You totally understood the reasoning for it. And
he got his lick back.
He got his lick back. And
how many licks has it been now that these guys have gotten back from each other?
I don't know. This is like the,
Tootsie Roll commercial.
Man, I was going to make that reference, but I'm like, God, that sounds so dated. So
we weren't even alive when but it's just, it's popular. Yeah.
And yeah, so I kind of like the fact like this almost, there felt like there was a bit of just pushback towards last week's finish of turning Jay. And this makes it feel much more kind of like, you could still see he's going this direction, but it's a bit more of just he's trying to stand up for himself, and it's not like this full-on heel turn. It's like they're doing what I thought they were going to do with Daniel Garcia, where they was going to make it a bit more of a gray area for him. But I did like this ending here, what they did.
Like, are you saying Jay came across too heelish and that they
not so much of how he came off? I think it was just a lot of audience that they really like this guy as a babyface and don't want to see him turned. And they're obviously making changes to the character. And tonight, I mean, he was still playing like this new role, but in this closing scene, it was almost like he was the babyface in this light, just trying to, he was Psycho Stu in the equation, like offering his hand and then got suckered.
Right. Yes. I think that they're still teasing something with Jay. They want us to think that he's up to no good, you know, thus the phone call that he's not willing to tell Jimmy. So I think we're still supposed to think that a heel turn might be in play. But ultimately, you know, if you feel like, are you interested in the feud between these two? And I would say that they've done a good enough job at just elevating the tension between the two of them. I've actually been very impressed with Knight over these past several weeks. I think he's been very consistent and he's delivering well in ring as the focal point of some of these matches. And I think it's this feels like a good step up for LA Knight. You know, Jay's already at a world title level, and LA Knight feels like he's being transported up there with him, because I think he's doing really well. So ultimately, yeah, this does not feel like the hottest program on any show right now. Like, this feels like, hey, we don't have we got Punk and Rollins. You know, that's certainly to me the A program on the show, but they've done a good job though, I feel.
There was some good wrestling on the show, I thought, on this show. Like, better than a lot of, like, typical Raws, I thought. Like, it was, I still feel the high point of the show was the face-to-face segment. I think that was the most effective, 20 minutes of the whole show and the strongest push for WrestlePalooza on Saturday. But in terms of the programs for Saturday, how did you feel they focused on them on the show? Mainly this and the Usos reunion.
I thought it was good. Yeah.
And the women's match, I guess, as well as the program.
Yeah. I mean, primarily it's, you know, the intergender match that I think has my interest. The Usos reuniting to me isn't that big of a deal. Like, I feel like I just saw them together with War Games about a year ago. That this doesn't really feel like it has that level of like intrigue. But the big feud is, of course, Jey Uso versus LA Knight for the future. And I think that's being handled pretty well. I thought they gave appropriate sort of epilogue to Worlds Collide on the show as well. Dominic, you know, all really being featured. I think Dragon Lee being featured on the show and El Grande Americano gives you that sort of feel as a bridge between that show and, you know, WWE proper. A reintroduction to Bayley was also one of the newsworthy events of the show. And I'm intrigued, you know.
And we also got a debut in Bayley's office with her friend that she was talking to.
No, well, it's just her.
Do we know that?
I guess we don't, John. No.
Okay. Stay tuned. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us here on the YouTube portion of the show. But the fun continues over on the Post Wrestling Cafe, where you can jump on board. This week, cafe members will get access to not just the XL version of Rewind to Dynamite and SmackDown, but we're bringing you Survivor Series 1995 on Thursday, featuring one of Waiting's favorite matches of all time, Diesel versus Bret Hart from Landover, Maryland, Washington, D.C. at the U.S. Air Arena. So that will be our focus this coming Thursday. And just a look ahead to this weekend, we will be doing a dual review on Sunday covering both All Out and WrestlePalooza. So that will be here on this channel on Sunday. So you can look out for that and going through many, many hours of pro wrestling.
And later on this month, exclusively in the Post Wrestling Cafe, you got reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and of course, weekly editions of Collision Course, except for this week, because we'll be handling that September to Remember 3-hour edition of Dynamite this coming Wednesday. So join us for that.
All right. Goodbye, YouTube.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.